Hi, all. This is Charlie Hedges. I just finished a podcast with my friend Terry Hershey, and what I want to do is offer like a preface to a book, a preface to the podcast. This podcast is on the subject of awe, and I want you to know how much I struggled orchestrating this podcast. I had great notes before, and I knew what I wanted to do, and once Terry and I got talking, I discovered how difficult it was to talk on awe. I had this feeling that I needed to instruct and educate on a subject that requires no instruction or no education. So I hope you enjoy this podcast, knowing the struggle that I went through, but I think our conclusions and our ideas are immensely powerful. Hope you enjoy.
Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. When I began the next chapter with Charlie, if you can believe this, back in 2014, I came upon the descriptor, which is the next chapter in search of meaning, adventure, and awe. Now, since that time, I've written and podcasted a boatload about the meaning of life, but not as much about adventure and even less about awe. And yet, awe is one of my personal favorite joys in life. I love art, architecture, nature, and what Terry Hershey calls giddy human responses to life and the wonder of life. Well, today, Terry and I explore the nature of awe as well as the unfortunate proclivity to allow obstacles to get in the way. So with that, let's bring on Terry Hershey to help us navigate that tension between awful and awful. Yo, Hirsch, what's up, man?
Hey, Charles. All right, Merry Christmas.
Yes.
Christmas is actually over January the 6th.
Oh my goodness, we got the liturgical Catholic wannabe on the phone here, Paul.
Anglican, but that's okay.
But yeah. You're not an Anglican wannabe. Anyway, you are an Anglican.
I am an Anglican, but yes, but the Epiphany, Everybody sings it, even if they're not religious. They sing the 12 days of Christmas.
And the 12 days of Christmas are, do they begin on Christmas Day?
Christmas Day is number one.
Christmas Day is number one. You know how many of us don't know that?
But a long way of saying that my Christmas tree is still not down yet, is the point.
you can make a bout of laziness, you can make it a religious ceremony, right?
No, this is about awe. We happened to buy a tree this year that was exquisitely beautiful.
Really?
And we didn't want to throw it away. It's so nice.
A real tree.
We always get a real tree. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm. You know, that shows me shows how much I am into awe when I have my plastic tree that I set up every year. But it's beautiful. Yeah. My wife makes it beautiful. That's what makes it beautiful.
Anyway, I didn't remember what the subject was, but I just thought I'd start there.
Okay, well, that's good. So, you know, I was thinking as I was preparing for this show that since you were on the show just a couple of weeks ago, you know, my guess is you're wondering, what's up with Hedges? Can he find another guest for the podcast? But as in all your posts, you write, here's the deal. Well, here's the deal. A few days ago, you wrote in your Daily Sabbath Moment a piece that reminded me of the often underexperienced human passion for awe. And I have found that you've used it so many times, and I appreciate it. You love the word giddy. So let's, why don't we begin with you describing that word? Tell me some things that make Terry Hershey giddy.
Before I go there, so the quote, the Abraham Heschel quote, because this is a paradigm shift for people. If you're going to talk about awe, this is a paradigm shift. In other words, this has to do with the way you view the world or reality, etc. So Abram Heschel is a rabbi. He's not with us anymore. But anyway, Abram Heschel quote is, we teach our children how to weigh and measure, how to weigh and measure. Perhaps we should continue to teach them awe and wonder.
Brilliant.
Now, that's perfect for the culture we live in, because we live in a culture that everything is numbered and it's predicated on weighing and measuring. You know, are we there yet, and how much do we have? And when you do that, you miss the paradigm shift, which connects you to the center of what I would call, you know, the sacred core of life. And so that the awe is being in the presence of the sacred core of life. And it's interesting, because I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but I was, my little thing about the Christmas tree and Epiphany, I wasn't planning to say that, but when you think of awe, you think, and because the only reason I'm saying this is because I was just with somebody who had a dog, and their dog was all of a sudden was giddy, cheerfully giddy about doing something. In other words, the dog was focusing on whatever was at the core of the present moment. And that's the other thing about giddiness or awe, is I'm in this present moment. This present moment is enough. Whatever it is, I put down my need to be somewhere that I'm not. So that's a long way to begin to answer your question about what makes me giddy.
Well, let me respond to that. It has to do with who I am as well, understanding me.
The first thing is you got to give yourself the permission to see it and
yes.
be getting it. Yeah, I mean, I start with this paradigm shift because it's a big deal. Because if we just start with, we need to learn how to have awe and giddiness. So then we just treat it as another test or contest. Okay, I'll be giddy today. Tell me how to do it. And then you're still missing the point.
I love it. Yeah.
Am I giddy enough? In other words,
the giddy scale.
Yeah, it's like a giddy test. You wouldn't believe how giddy I was. That's nothing. I was giddier than that. Missing the whole point that this isn't something. In fact, it's not even something you put in a collection that you save to go back to. I mean, this is something that in the moment you just savor. You savor it. Two things. You savor it. So you're here. I'm here now. It really means I'm here now. There is no yesterday. There's some. I'm here now. And then what it gives birth to is two things. Gratitude. Thank you. Glad to be here. Glad to be alive. Gratitude. And the third thing it gives birth to is, I don't need an ego to do this. I can put my ego down. The world is big enough, and humility takes over. And once that happens, then there's a connectedness to not just the moment and earth, but to the other people who are around me, you know? So
that's a fine way of looking at it, is connectedness. That when I see that I am connected to something marvelous outside of myself, there is
right.
There's just something awesome about that. And
right.
And you know what I think about as you were talking, giddy. You know, there's a story you tell or you write about. I'm not sure if I've heard you say it. Maybe you said it in lecture, but the story of you and Zach when you were sitting on the park bench, not the park bench, but the store bench outside the store, eating a donut or eating something. What were you eating?
Right, he was eating a cinnamon roll. Cinnamon.
Yes, yes.
Homemade cinnamon, big cinnamon thing.
Yeah, tell us that story.
A gooey one. It's one of those local joints on Vashon Island, which you've been to Vashon Island.
Yes.
So it's the local coffee store, mm-hmm. Coffee and homemade desserts. It's called Bob's. The guy who owns it isn't named Bob, but it doesn't really matter. It's still called Bob's because that's just what it's called. And so we're sitting outside. And, of course, the bench we're sitting on was made from a downed tree. Somebody, some somebody, some artist on the island made it from a piece of a downed tree, a tree that was a couple hundred years old. So it's a piece of an old tree. So you're sitting on something that's 200 years old, for starters, which makes you appreciate stuff. We're watching, you know, it's a one-horse town. We're just watching cars go by. You can count them. It's not that many. And Zach is, this is one of those two-hands cinnamon rolls that you need to eat, the gooey kind, so it's all running down his face, and he's just completely into this cinnamon roll. And I'm drinking my coffee, which, Seattle, is, this is going to be good coffee. So he says, Dad, he's got it all over his face. I think he was like 8 or 9. I don't know. Something was young. He says, Dad, this is the life.
You know, it's like...
This is the life.
That is so beautiful. That's such a wonderful story. And you know, it ties into, I'm not comparing Zach to a puppy, but it's like the puppy, you know, that sort of innocent naivete. That just is so into this moment. Nothing exists apart from this moment. And he caught the beauty of it.
Because you put down the need to weigh and measure it. In other words, should I appreciate it, like it? How does it measure up to some other time? And all that stuff, you know, the stuff we do.
Yeah, I you know, you talked about that in that post that I think I spoke of earlier. I did speak of that earlier. You talked about that in the post, and I was struck by the weighing and the measuring and the evaluating, all of those sort of things that you don't weigh and measure and evaluate that which is part of you. When it's intimately you, it's not a measurable activity. It is beyond that. And yet, where do we learn this weighing and measuring? Is this what we're taught in school, Terry?
Well, there's no doubt about that. But you think about, and then we reinforce it by carrying that paradigm with us. And we ask each other questions that are weigh and measuring questions. Think about it for a minute. If I do an event, let me back up. If you have pre-kindergarten, this is before kindergarten, and you ask these children, how many of you in here are artists? How many kids raise their hand? Yeah. Most of them.
Yeah.
Most of them. Okay, by the time you get to third or fourth grade, how many? Some. Junior high? Yeah. Couple. High school. The point is, we start with artists, and we wean it out of them.
That's...
So to answer your question, we start with artists. We start with kids who start with awe and wonder. And so the way we do it is the kind of questions we ask people. Because, I mean, I'll do, for example, just did a retreat recently, wherever it was. It was someplace. I forgot. But anyway, the subject was this subject. It was about...
Oh, really?
You know, well, it was about savoring the moment. It was about the sacrament of the present, about being present, be here now, the gift of enough, be here now. So it's about awe and wonder. And I said, but think about this for a minute. You're going to go home, and the first question your friend or person will ask you is what? Was it of value? Did you learn something? Think about that. The questions we ask each other are about weighing and measuring.
So what would be a better question, Terry, apart from what made you giddy?
What made you smile real big? What made you smile real big? What made your heart come alive?
Yes.
What made your heart take an extra beat? What made you stop and say, look? What made you say, did you see that? What made you say, OMG, without putting it on social media?
You know, Hirsch, that reminds me of a personal story when my son was old enough to still sit in a car seat and in the back seat of my car. And so my guess is he was 4 or 5 or something like that, and we were driving, just had come up from the beach in Laguna Beach, and we were on Laguna Beach Highway or Laguna Highway, and we weren't that far from the ocean, and we were singing, believe it or not, we were singing a David Wilcox song. We had David Wilcox on a, probably in those days it was a cassette or something, and it was on Prosperity. You know, Prosperity is coming and going, and we both loved that song, and we were singing that song at that age. He had heard it so many times on my radio or on my tape deck that we had listened to it that much, and it just so happened to be at sunset. And Terry, it was one of those sunsets that was just, you know, spectacular, right, and marvelous. And I don't know whatever drove me to do it, but I drove off the side of the road, parked my car, took my son out of the car seat and said, "Son, look at that. Is that absolutely amazing?" And, you know, he's, him being so young, you know, he's going to follow the lead of his father. And he just was so into it. Do you know, to this day, when my son sees a sunset, he will stop and look at that sunset and marvel at it because he learned it at such a young age?
Yeah. You were saying, what questions should you ask? And it's not just questions, but the first thing to do is, instead of diagnosing anything or assessing it, stop. Just give yourself the permission to stop. Breathe, take it in.
Yeah. And you have to be, it requires an entirely, as you said, it's a paradigm shift. It requires an entirely different paradigm. And if you're in our contemporary paradigm, you will never see it. You won't even see the sunset. And why is that? It's because...
Yes. And or there's even another shift that's going on now.
Uh-huh.
We see it in the framework of social media. And I was kind of joking about that. But we see it in the framework of social media. Because I know that if I take a picture, I'm going to get a bunch of likes for this one.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I'm so not into social media, so I don't even think about that. But you're absolutely right, because likes, now we're into weighing and measuring beauty, and and isn't that like art critics? In some ways they're helpful, but in other ways it's despicable. Because it's weighing and measuring. It's weighing and measuring art.
It's weighing and measuring. So a young artist, he's just new to this thing, but he loves his craft, and he's doing his very first art show. And you can relate to this, because back in the day, you and I used to go into art, you know, studios all the time.
Yeah.
Looking at paintings and stuff. But anyway, so he does his very first one, and so people are coming, and there's a very, very well-known art critic who happened to come to this thing. And so the art critic comes to the young man, and he said, "Would you like my opinion?" And the young man said, "Yes, I would." And the art critic says, "Well, it's useless." And the young man says, "Yes, I know, but I'd still like your opinion."
That's a good one. That's a good response. That's
a paradigm shift right there.
And you know, I cannot remember the name of the artist, but it's a very famous contemporary artist. And when he first began, he had a whatever they call them in New York. You know, those rooms that are just barely above ground, you know, they're not quite basement and not quite above basement, you know, where they just have windows of light. And he did his art, and you know, it was before he was famous, and he did all of the art strictly for his pleasure and what was coming out of his soul. It was they were revelations of his soul. And he talked about, after he became famous, he had this tendency to want to repeat what made him famous, because he went from art from the soul to your word, weighing and measuring. That let me get approval. Let me on social media get approval
for that.
But how terrible that is. That we've come to that place.
Yeah, but he saw that too. That's what's great. And there's a tendency even with that. There's a tendency even with that when we enjoy a moment of beauty or spontaneity, or the word you started with, which was giddiness, when you have one of those childlike moments, when you're fully present and fully alive, there's a temptation to pull yourself out of it because of something more important you're supposed to be doing.
You know, it's an awkward dance, is it not? Because it's a dance, you know, between being fully alive is an awkward dance in that you have to pay attention without an awareness that you're paying attention. Because once you start paying attention, then you just fall into counting. And you fall into, okay, yeah, that's awesome. That's not, you know, there's some sort of release that is required at that same time, don't you think? You know, some sort of release from paying attention is about the releasing yourself from paying attention.
Yeah, well, there's actually a true story about a study they did with children. These are really young children, because this is an irony, because speaking of paradigm shifts, because these are kids who are they're acting up in school in the sense that they're not focused on the teacher, you know, 100%, and that's not good. We want them to be focused, and the language we use for that is we want them to pay attention. So this is the irony. So they're teaching, these are 6-year-old kids, 7-year-old kids, teaching them how to pay attention. And they did it in terms of minutes. They would give these kids, you know, rewards for paying attention for 9 minutes, 10 minutes, right? And this was a great study. And the kids would do it. They'd pay attention for 9, 10 minutes. And do you know what they were paying attention to?
Paying attention.
Exactly what you said, paying attention. In other words, they were doing it because they were going to get the award for paying attention, which means you're not seeing a darn thing. They were paying attention to other stuff, but we weed that out of kids. We weed that out of kids.
You write a lot about soul, and paying attention is it not sort of a relinquishing this control of paying attention and diving deeper into the soul and allowing our soul to be our guide and our director and the receiver of what is observed. Did that make any sense?
I'm really with you on the giving up the control part. There's no doubt about that. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's why, you know, people who walk the Camino de Santiago or other people who do pilgrimages, I mean, you can sort of parse it and, you know, script it, or you can be a pilgrim, which means you're giving up the control of that and you're open to whatever, in your language, whatever your soul is willing to learn and see.
I'm silent because you know, that is so, that's so true. We have such a need for control, and as soon as we're controlling, we can't see what we need to see.
Yes, correct.
So what I'd like to do is I want to go back to my question that I asked you a bit ago. What are the kinds of things, you know, I said that make you giddy? Help me understand what are the kinds of things where you reach another another level or another aspect of life that takes you to this awe and wonder?
What are the kinds of things that happen, you say?
For you, for Terry. Yeah.
What's curious is, I'm thinking of moments when that has happened, is happened for me when I started to become a gardener. When I, I tell the story about my friend says, is there anything in life where your passion is alive again? Because as you know, I was clergy when I was young, you know, and it doesn't take long when you're clergy to start keeping score, as you know very well. And weighing and measuring is a big deal. And there's not a lot, you know, it's hard to celebrate and savor giddiness, et cetera, or awe. Unless it's manufactured. But I moved to Vashon Island 33 years ago. And I became a gardener, did gardening. And I said to my friend, gardening is, and he said, but gardening is so self-centered. And then I realized the irony is that was the first time in my life when I didn't feel self-centered. So this is to answer your question. When I was doing the other stuff, I was completely self-centered because I was so focused on performance and what I needed to achieve and how I was being judged and weighed. And in gardening, I let all that go. And because I was connected to something much bigger than me or my ego. And that was the beauty of it. And so I could marvel at a little seed growing, you know, or a piece of fruit on a tree, or the way a bird was, you know, I could just marvel at the most amazing things that I had no idea about. And I was also in a world now where I literally gave a damn about a world bigger than my need to be good at something, you know.
I do know that is, and that is, that's back to the sort of, as we're paying attention without paying attention, you know, it's
yes.
Paying attention without focusing on paying attention. It's just simply a matter of letting go, detaching, and being.
I feel
we're talking so esoterically here, you know, I'm finding it difficult to communicate the words that I'm feeling, because awe and wonder and giddiness, it truly, unless you're Mary Oliver, is truly indescribable.
Yeah, and she's the perfect one to write about, because every single one of her poems is unpacking, literally unpacking, some kind of moment of awe.
It is, yeah.
And they are, she just literally invites you into the moment, into that space. And that's the gift. And that's why I invite one of the ways through the paradigm shift is with your friend or family or whoever, at the end of a day or end of a week, is you unpack moments like this. A lot of people do gratitude moments, and those are lovely. That's a great way to do it, because these are gratitude moments. But things that made you smile real big, you know, things that made your heart bigger. Or as Mary Oliver would call it, she's a bride married to amazement. I love that.
That's beautiful. You know? And that's true for all of us, male or female.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, if you just have those questions and you get a chance to answer those questions with somebody, that's a great start. We've talked about the story of my friend Lee Jaster, who's a...
Yeah,
well, he's not with us anymore. He's Episcopal priest. Lee used to work with me when I did conferences called Gardens in Grace, and Lee was... He tells this great story, and he's a very effusive person anyway, but that he loved the flowers outside of his house, but he would go outside and walk among them to pray. He did a 20-minute prayer thing, a liturgical prayer thing for himself each day. And one day he was walking out there, and one of the irises, or lilies, one of the lilies was in bloom, and it was very fragrant. And he said the fragrance hit him so much, and he was giddy as a kid. He could spend all his time looking at all the lilies and smelling them and remembering childhood things, and he was just having a blast. And then he said, and then it hit me that almost a half hour had passed. He said the first thing I felt when I saw that was guilt. He said, because I missed my prayer time. Hmm. And he said, until it hit me that this had been my prayer time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful.
See, that's the paradigm shift right there. So using to your thing about making it non-esoteric, let's use Mary Oliver's instructions for life. Pay attention. We've talked about that. Number two, she says, be astonished. Okay. Boom. What'd you see? And notice, amazed. The giddiness. And number three, she says, tell about it. So that's what makes it non-esoteric, is you tell about it. In other words, Lee tells that story to me, and I tell that story to you, and now your podcasters can tell. In other words, these moments of awe get passed on. That's the best part.
You're so right on, and I'm seeing, and as I'm truly wrestling with this subject in this podcast. I thought I was very prepared for this podcast, and I'm finding out I am not, because there is a conflict going on in my inner spirit, and that I'm trying to articulate that which should not be articulated. You know, I'm trying to find,
correct.
Okay, let's define awe. As soon as I define awe, Terry, I'm measuring. This is full of awe, or it turns into this is awful, because right. it's you know, I fear leading our audience back into weighing and measuring, do this, do that, and you will have a life filled with awe, and we can't do that.
No, I mean, it's just a lot of it is, for example, so I try to teach, when I do workshops, I try to teach people about this, or in other words, the shift is how, right? So I have an exercise that I do, because all my retreats are typically at retreat centers, so there's places to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have them pick a spot that they can walk to in a little over 60 seconds, 90 seconds. And you can walk a long way in 90 seconds, because I say, pick that spot, but you have to get there as fast as you possibly can, thinking only about the place you're getting. Don't think about anything else, just get there. And many of these people have been at these retreat centers before anyway, so they have a spot, and off they go. And I said, once you're there, you have to stop, pause, take a deep breath, say a prayer if you want, but I want you to come back, but I want you to take 15 minutes to come back what you just walked. And then I say, here's the thing. I want you to use what? All of your senses. What do you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell? What do you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell? And the point being, what was on the journey they just took that they missed because they were focused on getting there? This is the exercise in now how you practice all. In other words, how do you walk the way coming home, whether differently than the way walking out? That's the key.
Oh, my goodness. Did you make that up? Or did you find that somewhere? Because that's brilliant.
No, I made it up, yeah.
Yeah, way to go, Hirsch. That's a great exercise. As a matter of fact, it would probably be a worthy exercise to do. I can't say every day, because we're just, you know, our lives are filled with busyness and distractions and accomplishments. But if we could once or twice a week just spend, you know, half an hour even doing that, what we would get. And I really like, and I'm going to take a break now, but what I really like, I think you're onto something with seeing the world through our senses, not through our intellect.
Right, correct.
Okay, let's take a break, and I'm going to talk about that. Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges, and welcome to the next chapter with Charlie Hedges as we continue our conversation with our, you know, just one of my favorite friends and favorite guests, Terry Hershey. And we are talking about what is most difficult to talk about, and that is awe and catching, trying to receive the beauty of the world without evaluating that beauty. Now, Terry brought up at the end of, before we went on break, talked about using our senses as a mechanism for comprehending and embracing awe. Talk to me about those senses, Terry, what that is like and what the awe is like.
For starters, one of my favorite old stories is about the first grade class who was asked to name the seven wonders of the world, and they were into it and naming, you know, pyramids, et cetera, and Niagara Falls. And except one kid doesn't say anything, and the teacher says to her, you know, do you have an answer? And she said, I don't think I understand the question. And she said, why? Because I don't have any of the right answers. And she said, well, tell us what you got. And the little girl said, the seven wonders of the world are to see, hear, taste, touch, smell, love, and belong. The affirmation, and so I think what's so profound about those, the senses, is the senses ground us. And we use that word. We talk about being grounded. In other words, and grounded means I'm at home in my own skin. So I'm right here now. And that's what the senses do, is they put me right here now. And awe is about being in the present moment, and the permission to. That's why the questions I was asking, in terms of changing the paradigm, are questions connected to our senses. What did you see that made you smile real big? You know.
Yeah.
What did you hear? Did your heart good? These kind of things.
That's so good, and it. Because we live in a world, and our world, I'm talking about our culture, about the American culture, we live in a world of the intellect. And, you know, I don't want to keep coming back to weighing and measuring, because I think we really covered that. But it is very calculating that we know certain things and we do certain things in certain ways, and that somehow, in our productivity and accomplishment oriented mindset, that we get self assurance with that, but it separates us from the wonder of the world, because it is so calculated. And when you're using the senses, you're not, you know what comes to my mind? And I have no doubt that I'm going to get some feedback that's not, but I'm going to use this illustration anyway. You know, one of the first things that came to my mind when you talked about senses and awe is sex. I mean, let's just talk about it. You don't calculate. That is not a calculating. That is not a measuring. That is, you're out of this world, and you're into another world, and I think it may be, I hope it's not offensive, but it may be one of those things that God gave us to get us out of this world and into His world of delight and goodness and giving and receiving. What do you think about that?
I think, when you get to a certain age, your body doesn't bend as much, and so you are in the present moment then.
yeah, you get a certain age, and, you know, that is like, what was that? What is that word again?
Well, given the subject of sex goes back to the weight and measuring, because we're taught that there are certain people who are really good at it, and you're trained to do it that way rather than just savoring and celebrating. But it's just, I mean, it's even just think about it from the vantage point of a hug, and how perfect is it given COVID, how many people weren't able to hug their family members or their grandchildren for a year or 2 years, and what that hug was like, which was the senses were unbelievably alive and well, and you were in the present moment. Those hugs were, to your illustration, exactly. And that was awe personified.
I love the way you cleaned up my illustration. That's very nice. You just saved us in doing that, and especially if we here I'm going to use a word that we were knocking it before, but if you pay attention to that hug, because we can hug sort of in a perfunctory sort of way, or especially if we haven't seen somebody or somebody, you know, we already have a deep love attachment with this person. That hug, you know, that lasts more than a half a second can be very meaningful, can be powerfully meaningful. And yeah,
Well, the prodigal son, the father hug, lasted minutes.
Yeah, Mike, it's one of my absolute favorite stories in Bible, is the prodigal son story. I'm thinking this has a lot to do with our relationship with God. And you know, my study of the older, you know, medieval Christian mystics, and there is no legalism, fundamentalism, evangelicalism in their thought. They are all about relationship. They're all about intimacy. They're all about, I'm reading Julian of Norwich again, and just blown away by Julian of Norwich. And everything is about relationship. And everything is about the beauty and the wonder of God and the grace of God and the mercy of God and how powerful this is. And she does not, she out and out says, there are not things you do, there are things you receive and things you become a part of and allow to become a part of you in the image of God. Now, don't you think a true understanding of God has nothing to do with, let's use your words, weighing and measuring? I mean, yeah. Nothing to do, Terry.
And to your point is that, and the other thing that the mystics are not is creedal. They don't have a creed. In other words,
exactly.
That's exactly what we do. We say, how do you experience God? And I had to write a paper about what I believed. Back to your point. In other words, I made it cerebral instantly. I didn't, but we do theologically, we do church-wise, we make it cerebral instantly. And we miss the see, hear, taste, touch, smell, you know, which is the grounding, the being present, and the letting go of the need to put it in a box.
Yeah.
The wind's points.
That's why I'm struggling so much with this show. And I'll admit it to our listeners, I'm struggling so much because I've been struggling with articulating things of late, because sometimes my thoughts are very clear to me, but then when I try to articulate them, I cannot. I utterly fail. Maybe I need to start writing poetry, because that's the only thing, and just let my thoughts roam and wander.
That's not a bad idea. That's a good idea, actually. Just write it.
Yeah, just let it. I mean, I think, you know, you told me when I was in writing, as I'm preparing to write a new book, and I'm asking you how to start, and you said, just write. And I said, write on what? And he says, I don't care. You said, I don't care. Just start writing and let it flow. When I'm so intentional and I outline it, and I know where I'm going, I know the introduction, the middle, and the end, you know, I'm making this piece of art formulaic. There's a difference between formula and journeyman and master. You know, I love the idea that I use this quite frequently, that the difference between journeymen and masters and apprentices. Apprentices are learning to follow the rules exactly. You know, an apprentice at any endeavor is learning to follow a certain set of processes that are essential. A journeyman is not learning, but a journeyman is magnificent at performing according to these rules and processes. But a master knows these rules and processes inside out, but throws them away and then goes with her heart.
Correct. That's great.
But using, still not neglecting the processes. The processes are still right there, but we're not focused on the process. We're focused on the revelation or the creative piece.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's the story I tell. It's a Buddhist story about a guy who the Zen master, Zen teacher meets him in a village and so thrilled. He said, you know, what do I need to do for my inner peace? And the Zen master said, oh, okay. So he gave him a prayer. Here's your prayer. He gave him what the words were in the prayer. He gave him the specific prayer. He told him what hours of the day to pray specifically, and then what posture he should be in. So mm-hmm. that was all there. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the guy goes back to his cave, you know, your little cave, to do inner peace. But he does everything he's supposed to do. And after a week of doing this, no inner peace, a month, anyway, a year, 2 years, no inner peace, even doing this. So the Zen master's back in the village, so the guy goes back to confront him and says, hey, what the heck? You told me this was going to get me inner peace. And the Zen master said, I don't remember meeting you. What did I tell you? And the guy told him everything. And the Zen master says, oh, no, I gave you the wrong list. And so the guy is just depressed, completely depressed. So he goes back to his cave, and he doesn't know what to do, because for 2 years he's been doing this thing. So he just does what he's been normally doing. But for the first time in 2 years, he notices the color of the sky. He feels the breeze on his arms. He hears the birds singing, because for the first time in 2 years, the liturgy, in other words, the script, didn't yes. control him.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, and you know what I want to do? I think that is so good. I think that summarizes what we've been trying to talk about. I think that really captures indescribable piece of wonder. Maybe, and I said that, I want to close with that, but I want to tell you a story that I go to when I think of awe. And I was thinking about it as I was preparing for this show. I noticed, I went to a blog that I had written years ago. I looked at the date. I couldn't believe it was October 2014. That I was doing this blog October 2014. I had no idea I was doing it that long, Terry.
That's awesome.
And I wrote this. I still think it's one of my better pieces. At least it's one of the better titles that I ever wrote. And it's How Italy Nearly Ruined My Life. And that was my first trip to Italy, and I was confronted by regular, nonstop beauty and awe. And it had to do with the architecture. It had to do with the food, with the coffee, gelato, people. And I knew I had to return to the Orange County, and I had to return to tiny boxes and no mom and pop restaurants, only restaurant chains, and I had to return to facades, you know, that you know, make this house look like it's a Georgia or Maine. You know, like Woodbridge was trying to look like Maine. And it was all a facade. It was all phony. And I knew that's what I had to return to. And I was so saddened that I wouldn't be able to see this regularly. Does that strike you?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And so did, yeah, absolutely. I asked back to that little walk thing, giving yourself the permission to do that 15-minute walk of see, hear, taste, touch, smell.
You know, I think that's, if we were to give an assignment, which I have never done, so let's just give an encouragement to anybody listening to try that. to try just taking a 15-minute walk that you could do in less than 5 minutes, and to just look at what even in my sort of staid tiny box neighborhood, I could look at the way people have done their front lawn sort of landscaping, or look at the unique things that people have done, or we pass a park and there are magnificent oak trees, and to just stop and pay attention to an oak tree. And I would encourage everybody to give that a shot and to follow Terry's direction. So Hirsch, you're a gem, my friend. Thanks for your time and your wisdom. It's always such a pleasure chatting with you. Even when we're chatting our different views of politics, it's still a wonder to chatting with you.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, no, it's always good.
And I want to encourage everybody to check out Sabbath Moment at terryhershey.com, and that's spelled Terry Hirsch, like Terry Hershey, like the candy bar. And just enjoy Sabbath Moment, because it's really a brilliant piece you write, Terry.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today.
All right.
This is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.